China.
Hey guys, today we got a special guest visiting from Australia, Sam the Sharpshooter, and he's come all the way here to
say hi, Sam.
Hey guys,
he's come for some family business, I guess.
Yep,
brother's getting married here.
All right,
hey, and shout out to Dan.
Yeah, and we're gonna
congratulations. But while he's here, he's training us, giving us some lessons. Been around Beijing and Shanghai. Been training here, and his life and experience.
Yeah, listen us geek out about MMA. So, good luck, listener.
Peace.
Word.
Hey, we're here with a guest today, and look, guest, I don't know who you are. Everybody else knows who you are, but I don't know who you are. First, can you introduce yourself? Who are you? Hi.
Hey, so I'm Sam Hayward. Sam the Sharpshooter Hayward is kind of a name I'm known by as well. I'm a professional mixed martial arts fighter from Australia.
All right, so you're not going to pound me out, right?
Nah.
All right, what if I ask some stupid shit? Are you going to pound me out?
Nah, man.
All right, cool.
This is
perfect.
A safe zone.
Perfect.
This is your safe zone. Yeah, look up Sammy the Sharpshooter Hayward on Facebook, and then look up Sharpshooter Hayward on Instagram. They're my two pages.
Both blocked in China, but go on.
Yeah. I just got WeChat.
Oh, you got China, WeChat? So all right.
I'm rocking that. But, yeah,
where can they see your fights?
Look them up on YouTube.
YouTube,
and all you need to put into YouTube is Sam Hayward. So that's HAYWARD. And you'll see them.
I can't emphasize enough.
By the way,
watch these guys fight.
You know what we're gonna do? We're gonna put all this in the show notes.
Yeah, so for me, look up on Facebook Sam the Sharpshooter Hayward, or Sammy the Sharpshooter Hayward, actually, now. Give that a like.
The Sharpshooter?
Yeah, the Sharpshooter.
Oh, that's not bad.
I got the t-shirt.
Did you give it to yourself?
Nah, man, you can't. You're not allowed to give yourself.
Of course
See,
not.
If I had to give, like, I've got a few, like, nicknames I would have loved. I would have loved, like, Sam Bam Bam Hayward or Sam the Vanilla Killer.
Did you try to suggest it? Yeah. Are people calling me this now? Man, this is weird.
Like, yeah, I was, like, giving hints and saying to guys, like, oh, I'll give you $10 if you start calling me Bam Bam. Nah, man, my original nickname was The Ham.
That's terrible.
Yeah,
that's awful.
I used to get pissed off when people would call me The Ham.
The Ham Sandwich.
Yeah, because when I started my, like, training jiu-jitsu in particular, I was a lot heavier. I was like 95 to 105 kilos. I now fight at like 70 to 77.
Okay.
So I definitely did warrant the Ham nickname, and there was a lot of beers drank, a lot of KFC, a lot of McDonald's.
Oh, so you're a little rounder.
Yeah,
before.
Yeah, for sure. I was definitely way out of shape. But I guess, like, I tried my hardest to get rid of that nickname, and I made it very clear to people that when they called me Ham or Hamster, I used to get Hamster a lot.
Oh, shit, that sucks.
It was like I'd just try to smash them at the gym. So if it was someone from the gym and they were giving it to me, I just was like, yeah, I'm going to smash you tonight. But when it's the guys that are way better than me, you just kind of got to wear it. The Sharpshooter came about because after my first pro fight, I fought this really tough Iranian wrestler.
Okay.
And anyone who knows, like, what a tough wrestler feels like, and then you think of a tough Iranian wrestler, this guy was crazy. He was so strong. And I caught him in a move called the Ham Sandwich, right? And it's like that's like the 10th planet name for it, and 10th planet is a style of jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy was so tough that, like, he tore his ACL, I think. I think it did, like, some serious damage to his knee, because I saw him a week later on crutches with his knee wrapped up. So I performed this move on him. He didn't tap out to it, so I ended up finishing him off in a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
But the move also kind of looks like Bret the Hitman Hart's old fight finisher from the WWF, the sharpshooter. Right? So Bret the Hitman Hart and the Hart Foundation. I'm a massive wrestling fan as well. And he used to hit the sharpshooter, which was like a leg attack. And so after my fight, I think I was partying with my coach and some of our friends, and someone said that it looked like the sharpshooter, and
It just
kind of stuck, and it kind of fits me. Like,
you are a lucky man. You're stuck with a ham sandwich or whatever.
If I could pick between ham or hamster,
you lucked out.
I'm pretty lucky.
I'm assuming, I mean, we're all kind of the same age. Did you want to be Bruce Lee as a kid?
Yeah, man.
Okay, because I was like, that must go through your head, right?
That's pretty much what happened. I watched like heaps of Bruce Lee, and his martial art that he did when he was younger was Wing Chun, Kung Fu.
Uh-huh.
And man,
did you do Wing Chun?
Yeah, man. I was like immediately Wing Chun, and from the age of like 11 through to 18, I was like Kung Fu.
But where were you
studying?
I mean, you told me you came from like a smallish town. Like,
yeah, I was lucky. There was a.
Well, you were like at a Rex Wando.
Nah, not really.
Or was the guy legit?
Dude was pretty legit. He was pretty legit. All traditional martial arts have got like elements of realness to them, and it kind of comes down to the individual to take that out and to be able to apply it. You know, the same as, you know.
Do you align your chakras before every fight?
Yeah, man, always. And I'm practicing all my chi sao and all my stuff. But, you know, it's. So yeah, that was what I did. Like, and I fought like Sanda or San Shao. So it's like kickboxing with takedowns.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, you know, basketball stadiums and town halls all around Melbourne and Australia. And I did really well in that. And pretty much I progressed from there. Watched so much MMA that I finally decided I'd start jiu-jitsu.
Uh-huh.
And it was more like starting jiu-jitsu because I just wanted to learn how to beat up jiu-jitsu guys, and I knew that I'd have to defend the chokes and the locks.
What brought that realization?
Man, just watching mixed martial arts. Like, if you watch MMA and you're honest, you realize that you've got to be more than one-dimensional. You can't just be a striker. You can't just be one-dimensional with your fighting. And I think, like, UFC 1 proved that. Like, you just got to watch that and you just see, like, well-trained strikers to getting destroyed by a grappler.
So did you see that and you just watched it, or did you experience that and had a couple losses and go, well, I got to brush up on this?
Not really. Like, the losses I'd have was just, like, wrestling with my mates at school, and they'd be, like, a rugby player and I was, a kickboxer. And they would beat me in a wrestle. And I was like, this can't be happening, man. Like, I'm meant to be the fucking martial artist. I'm meant to be able to whoop everyone. And these meatheads are just...
You couldn't do the strike and stop them?
I didn't want to kill them. I kept that five-finger death touch. I didn't want to kill anyone. But
but I'm surprised, like, you know, like... And actually, I was actually thinking about this prior to this. I was, you know, China has, like, you know, what, a million kung fus, right? What does it have, like... All the Bagua and there's a million and 10 years ago, or maybe 20 years ago, before really the internet came around, you could say like, oh, there's this badass kung fu guy and he's just like, we could kill everyone. Oh, you gotta be careful. And now like overnight they disappeared. Like there's no one, you know. There's still probably a few as Wally refers to them, potbelly dojos. You know, like with the dojo guy has a little bit of belly and he's just like, he doesn't really do much. He's like, oh, let me show you technique, but he doesn't really like to bend his knees a lot. Just grab me by the wrist and we'll go from there.
Well, man, the technique that all like those kind of dudes hide behind is like, yeah, but I could kill you if I wanted to. You know, like I got my ninja strike to the throat that I could really hit you with in that situation. And man, it's just all bullshit. It really
is. Maybe to relate it a bit to China. I mean, it is, because through all the martial arts that are in China, all the kung fus, is it all bullshit? I mean, including, maybe Sandan, right? There's a little bit.
I definitely don't mean like all martial arts are definitely not bullshit. What I mean is like those guys that hide behind the idea of like, if it was a fight to the death, it would be different. It would be no different.
Right. Hercule Sainton comes up to mind. Hercule Sainton, one of my favorite fighters. No, nobody? Nah. Nobody? Dragon Ball Z?
No. Sorry, man.
Yeah, man. Hercule Saint.
Okay. I was thinking in the real world. Yeah.
This is probably the best fighter on the planet, right? No.
Was he over level 5,000?
No.
No. No. It was it before the little visor things?
No, man.
Oh, I don't remember.
He was like the dude, like the potbelly dojo kind of guy. Yeah. So he would come up here. He had the, you remember him? He had like the whole, like, you know, a persona, the whole branding thing. And you know, he'd come out and he would say he had this, like, these super techniques, and all you had to do was grab his, like, finger and he'll die. Like, that was his technique. He's like, I think you just grab his finger and then the person would die. Huh. Yeah. And so, like, he was like super. Anyway, I just.
Yeah, man, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. I feel like I'm like Yamcha or something like that. I'm not quite Goku. I'm not quite Vegeta yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, but
back at the ranch now.
Back at the ranch. No, but
wait. Can you?
What do you? I mean, well, actually, let me ask you, Wally. Is most kung fu bullshit?
Let's talk to Sam about this. I got some questions. I think.
Okay.
My opinion is this, is that a lot of it is bullshit now, in this day, in this age. But originally, probably worked in its time and its place. You know.
For sure. And I agree with that, man. Like, you can even look at like different styles that have been like more recent. Like in Australia, Kyokushin karate is really, really common and famous. And you look at the guy who started that, Masayama, and that dude is like as legit as they come. Like, mm-hmm. He used to kill bulls with one punch. Like, that was the kind of the story behind him. I know
that sounds like bullshit. That sounds like complete bullshit.
Honestly, look it up. Now, I don't know. I don't know the actual story behind it. Whether they had the bull kind of pinned, but he killed a bull with one punch to the head.
Now, for me, this sounds like, okay, look, I'm not a fighter. You guys are all talking fighting shit. I really don't know. But it sounds like if I'm watching a 1960 basketball match and you have, like, some dude doing a massive hook shot and that, like, kills them all and gets the ball in the basket. But you can't do that now against, you know, like Kobe or, you know, in these, like, LeBron James. Like,
for sure.
They're looking at you like, hey, really? You trying to do that?
I think, like, there's certainly, like, because because of the internet, really, it's kind of opened everyone up to being able to get information. So a young 10-year-old kid now can look up fighting and can see real fighting and can see, like, choreographed fake fighting. When we all grew up, you know, and when, you know, I'm not even that old, the realest fighting that I could find was, like, kickboxing and boxing and things like that. MMA wasn't very popular. When I used to try to explain what UFC was to people, I used to spend 10 minutes trying to explain it, and they couldn't get through their heads that there weren't as many rules as kickboxing, but there were rules, you know. Like, and early UFC didn't help that because you could strike to the groin, you could yeah, you know, do some crazy stuff. In, like, awesome. In early UFC.
Could you really, actually?
Yeah, man, this one dude, you should look up.
Yeah, I remember
Joe
that.
San. Joe San gets like KO'd with groin strikes. He gets, like, punched in the nuts, like, heaps of times, and gets KO'd through to groin strikes. He was from Hawaii, actually. Josan. Yeah. He's one of the
who knocked him out. It was he wanted to fight for a while, I think, right?
Yeah.
I forget. Anyways, I mean, I what are your thoughts on this? Because it's one of those things, like, it's how can I say? It's not to say that old styles were totally useless. Let's say even, well, of course, like, the competitive styles where rank was based, well, rank and reward is based on real live competition as opposed to memorizing katas and flow drills. Those are always much more effective, right?
For sure.
But you think about it, if about say even 10 years ago, for 15, 20 years ago for sure, if you were a great boxer or a kickboxer or a Muay Thai fighter, then you're pretty much king of your block. You know, you're probably king of your city, you know? And it may have been that a jiu-jitsu guy could beat you, but that they just weren't around. They just were unheard of. And it may have been, it's interesting, I've even heard of wrestlers who, from, you know, those older eras, that they say, oh, looking back, I realize I could have kicked everyone's ass with wrestling, but people wouldn't think like that. I would have been, even though I'm a wrestler, I could have beat a Muay Thai guy. I would have been scared of a Muay Thai guy because in our mindset, Muay Thai or boxing was the most badass shit out there.
Right.
Yeah, man. I agree with that 100%. I definitely don't think like traditional martial arts have got no place. Like there's some dudes that I've met that from traditional martial arts that are so legit, you know, like, and surprising, like, really surprising. Take Taekwondo, for example. 3 years ago, Taekwondo was like the laughing stock of the martial arts world, like the universe. If you were a Taekwondo black belt, people would snicker and laugh at you. You now look at it, it's like you've got Anthony Pettis, who's a lightweight champion. He's a Taekwondo black belt. You've got Conor McGregor going and learning Taekwondo kicks off people. You've got so many guys coming up that have got a little bit of different kind of forms and techniques than just your average Thai kickboxer. And it opens up a whole heap of ranges that aren't open to different guys. So I think using some of the techniques out of traditional martial arts is really useful. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing. There were funky China men from funky China.
I'm a food guy, yeah. So I'm in hospitality. You know, I cook, I do these things, you know, and I manage a club. The way that I look at it, from an outsider perspective, it seems like you have these traditional styles, and it's kind of like having a French chef or these other chefs. You know, the Japanese chef, the sushi chef, the Thai chef, and they're all making their food. But then somebody decided to do a fusion, and it's not a bad thing. But people are still saying like, that's not traditional. Like, if you have a French fusion, everybody just goes, oh, it's not traditional French. And they're kind of, like, snubbing their nose at it. But then again, it's still amazing fucking food.
Yeah. I agree, man. It's similar to that in a lot of ways. And I think, like, the current state of MMA probably goes to suggest that. Because a lot of guys, like, realistically, you can get it to a really good level in MMA and only achieve, like, a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Just have basic strikes down pat.
Some guys that have that, right?
For sure, man. And as long as you're super fit, strong, do hit strength and conditioning, you're going to be able to do well in mixed martial arts. There's no doubt about that. But there's going to be a limit to where you can get to. And you think about the best fighters that have existed. It's like Anderson Silva, John Jones, GSP. They weren't just fit dudes. They were guys who were technically proficient and mastered skills. Especially like a guy like Anderson Silva. No one's mastered striking like he did.
So these are the sushi chefs that decided to also do French food.
Absolutely, man. And it's like the perfect mix. You know, it's like the guy who's got the dedication to get really good at something and then doesn't have the narrow-mindedness to just stay with it. You know, once you get good at something, it's easy to just stay within that and kind of hide behind it.
So is there a kind of like mix that you think is the best for it? Is there, you know, if it's sushi and a little bit of French, or is it all French with a little bit of sushi?
Well, man, French, there's not many French fighters. There's only really Czech Congo.
Isn't there one? I don't know. I don't follow UFC, but there is a French fighter, right? They're fighting out of Paris. But you, right? There's somebody there.
Not that I know of. Czech Congo is like a heavyweight kickboxer in MMA, and he's.
But you know my question. Like, is there a certain traditional style of fighting plus, you know, these mixes of other ones are like make it better?
Yeah, the average MMA fighter, if you were to just say like what makes up the average MMA fighter, it would be like Thai kickboxing, a bit of Western boxing, freestyle wrestling, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's like your stock standard.
That's your meat and potatoes.
Yeah, that's your meat and potatoes. And you look at any MMA gym in the world virtually, they're going to have a Thai kickboxing class, they're going to have a freestyle wrestling class, and they're going to have a Jiu-Jitsu class.
All right, so have you ever had like some super badasses that did like WWF wrestling / you know, slingshot skills, archery, and you know, backflipping or something that just went like, wow, that's amazing.
Then for sure.
The pole jumper / wrestler.
Not necessarily like that kind of wild, but normally what it is it's like someone's got a background with like Taekwondo, and all of a sudden they can check kicks and do everything that a Thai kickboxer can do, but they've got like a really long range to their kicks as well. They can hit like side kicks and spinning back kicks and stuff like that. The same as a judo guy, you know, like a judo guy can hit throws and can hit clinch techniques that a freestyle wrestler or a Greco-Roman guy isn't necessarily used to. I think what's starting to happen more so than style versus style is it's more individuals, because like the best coaches in the world are experienced in all areas, or if they're not, then they get someone into their gym who is experienced in that area. And because of that, it comes down to the individual and it comes down to your body shape, your...
Which, like, is it, creativity?
Yeah, for sure. Creativity, all those types of things, how good you are at implementing the style that you have, you know, not trying to be someone you're not, not trying to do something you can't do. If I was to try and box like Mike Tyson, uh-huh. or if I was to try and kickbox like Mike Zambides, mm-hmm. I just wouldn't be able to do it because
I don't know, I mean this is just my perspective of it, but isn't that that's the game changers, right? It's what it doesn't work until it works, right? It's like, oh, this will never work, this move will never work, this boxing, this, the, until it works, then it's like, oh shit. And then it seems like, and again, I follow MMA really loosely, it seems like, well, that's what everyone does now. And you know, like you said, like taekwondo, everyone was laughing at it and like, no, you're not, I'm not gonna do taekwondo. And then you do it and it works and everyone's like, all right, let's all do taekwondo now.
Well, man, that's so true, because early on people thought like, oh no, man, kicking's bullshit. Like early on in MMA, no one kicked. And then leg kicks started to come about and people started losing fights to leg kicks, you know, the accumulation of like hacking your shin bone into someone's leg.
Yeah, that hurts.
And
just hitting a bag hurts. If you haven't done, like you showed me, Wally showed it to me at one point. We're doing shin kicks. I was like, nah, you know what? Nah.
So leg kicks kind of started becoming a thing. You know, people started winning fights to leg kicks. And then it was kind of like, well, head kicks are bullshit. Like, you can kick the leg, but you can't kick the head. It doesn't work. And then people start getting knocked out devastatingly with head kicks. And it's like, all right, that works. Well, that's just happened the whole time pretty much. You know, when you look at even like for a while, people thought that like the side kick didn't work or a spinning back kick doesn't work. And different guys implement them and show that it does work. That's like one of the coolest things about MMA, and there's not many sports like it at the moment where the sport's still developing. Like you look at a lot of sports, like all the plays, all the techniques, all those kind of things have kind of been developed. MMA, it's still developing right now, and it probably always will. I don't know if it ever gets to a point where all of the possible techniques have been explored.
I mean, you look at Russia, not samba. Samba's a dance.
Sambo.
Something I would be doing. Sambo, that's right. Sambo. Sambo, right, was it developed because in the Russo-Japanese War, and yeah. they were getting their ass completely kicked hand-to-hand, and they're like, we need a martial art. Well, our man, dudes can't fight.
Sambo's like got probably the dopest of all the martial arts backgrounds behind it. The government decided to work out what the best strategy would be for unarmed combat.
And then include a little tiny shorts.
Well, man, you look at it. So it's like, what are our fighters going to be wearing? They're going to be wearing jackets.
Mm-hmm.
The pants don't really matter. And they're going to be wearing boots. So that's why, like...
Oh, is that it? Is yeah, that man. Why that... That's
so, like, so it's like, when you look at things... Sorry.
Sorry, for the listeners, if you don't know what Google what a Sambo uniform looks like.
S-A-M-B-O.
Yes, it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, Sambo looks stupid, but... You meet a Sambo fighter and you immediately realize the legitimacy. And the thing with Sambo that changes it is because of the boots. When you're looking at like leg locks, it's so much more difficult to escape leg locks and it's so much easier to attack them.
Okay.
Because like the boot acts as like a handle, you know, so it fits in those grips really well. Yeah. Whereas like a heel, especially if you're sweating, a sweaty heel, that'll just slip out of like right. elbow joints sometimes. Very hard to lock down. So, yeah, Sambo's, like, super-duper legit. And as you said, it was, like, the government kind of put it together, mm-hmm. from my understanding, to help unarmed combat.
I want to shift topic for a second. So you've been training in... You train in Beijing, right?
Yeah, yep.
Where Beijing. Else? Beijing, Shanghai?
Yeah.
So, and then you're going to go to Suzhou tomorrow, right?
Yeah, that's it.
So what did you do? Just roll Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Yeah, so...
Wait, can I also cut you off and add to this? Why are you in China as well? Why are you going with that? I mean, yeah. Beijing, Shanghai, and like, all right, cool. This is China MSG. Why are you here?
So yeah, one of my older brothers is getting married. He's been living in Shanghai since 2009. So,
woohoo!
Yeah, what up? So that's to Danny, my brother. He's getting married this weekend. And So we, yeah, my family's just come over for a bit of a holiday. So we've been here for 2 weeks. First week was in Shanghai. Saw all the sights here.
Maybe and consumed then, a couple of beers.
Yeah, had a couple of cheeky beers. And then went to Beijing with mum and dad and did all the sights down there. And Beijing blew me away. Like, the Great Wall was, like, crazy. It was really crazy. You know, I said to a few people, sometimes when you go to see, like, those big wonders of the world or those massive things, they're underwhelming when you go see it. The Great Wall was, like, wicked.
It was really cool. I think that's for all of us. That's one of the sites that we all kind of enjoyed going to was the wall. The wall was freaking cool. And you could climb it up and down. But what about when you went to train? What was your impression? What's different? What's the same? What's the community of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Well, the first thing that's, like, really cool is there's not many sports in the world that you can just kind of take a gym bag anywhere you go and you can do your sport, you know, against other people. So jiu-jitsu is really cool because I don't speak Chinese and the gym in Beijing only had Chinese instruction. So it's really difficult to kind of bridge that gap.
Were there any foreigners there at all?
No.
Are
foreigners.
You serious?
Yeah, man.
I think this is the first time I hear of something like this.
That gym was like full on, like it was at the back of this alleyway behind this locked gate. I had to kind of like sneak around this gate only because like this shop owner kind of helps me out. I showed him the address. I showed about five people the address and people were telling me in different points. So I was walking around for like 15 minutes. Finally, this shop owner kind of showed me it was around the back of this gate. So I sneak around this gate and I was thinking, fuck, I hope I haven't just been led down the garden path here, man. I can't afford to get, you know.
Hey, so how tall are you?
6'3".
All right, you're 6'3". So what is that, about 184?
187.
187? All right, so you're a tall dude. All right, so like, Westerners, Australians are usually bigger than Chinese. Are you finding that the Chinese are no like match for you in there or?
Nah, see, that's another thing. That's like a big myth with jiu-jitsu. Strength definitely plays a role and size plays a role, but technique plays a bigger role. So if the technique level is the same, then obviously the stronger guy wins. But if a stronger guy has shit technique and a small dude has really good technique, he's going to destroy him. Like really.
So coming into China, you're going into every fight, every competition, just like it's anybody else. Not that they're smaller dudes or it's China or whatever or any kind of training. These guys still can scrap.
For sure, man. For sure. Like I think you have to respect everyone that you ever train with because there's that famous quote of like everyone you ever meet in life can teach you something, you know, so it's like even if these dudes might not be as good as me or as good as people I train with back home, you can still definitely learn off them.
So what happened when you got there?
The first thing was, man, all the gyms here, you have to take your shoes off at the door and I didn't realize that. So I keep walking into these places with my shoes on.
What? That's normal, though. There's mats.
Well, like in Australia, like a lot of the places have got like a reception area that you walk through.
I even knew that, dude.
I mean, that's.
I've noticed it everywhere here. Actually, everywhere here, you take your shoes off. Like people's houses, everywhere.
Yeah.
I took my shoes off here.
Yeah, thank you. on our mats.
In Australia,
we're on our mats.
Man, maybe it's just Australia. Everyone's just like, fuck it. I'll just get new carbon every couple of years.
Really? No, I mean that. Hey, you know, we got to remember we have that habit from being in Hawaii. Yeah, U.S. mainland, same thing.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. People walk
different
in.
Culture.
So you got there. And
So I got there. One of the first things that was really funny was I was flicking through, like they had this brochure, like this book that was kind of advertising the gym. And one of the, I couldn't read anything, obviously, but it was all written in Chinese, but they had like pictures I was, you know, looking at. And one of the pages had like celebrities who train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It was so funny because like half of the pictures were really like legit, like Paul Walker trained jiu-jitsu, Kelly Slater's trained jiu-jitsu, different celebrities trained jiu-jitsu, Ed O'Neill, Keanu
Anthony
Reeves.
Bourdain.
Yeah, Bourdain. Yeah. Bourdain competed, man. He won. He won gold medal in the New
and
York
he's
Open.
60 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was competing against other like masters.
Sure.
But man, you can't win a jiu-jitsu comp unless you've got some skills. He must be good. Yeah, and then there was all these like Photoshop pictures. Like they had Justin Bieber Photoshop next to Eddie Bravo getting a purple belt. It was just all these funny shit. And I was just thinking like, man, the dude who's put this together probably thought that this was legit. But
wait.
Work it out.
You think you'd take Justin Bieber?
Yeah.
All right, Justin Bieber, come over here, fight this guy unless you're a bitch.
Do not. I swear to God, I will call all the Chinese people to help me. Do not hurt our Canadian national icon. Do not hurt the Biebs.
Sam also has some security professional experience
working in clubs there, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, so, in Australia?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah.
So you would definitely handle your bouncers.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man. Like, I think, like, yeah, I would. Let's put that on the record.
He's calling him out. Williams.
But, you know, the funny thing is, it's exactly, I think, where we left off in the last podcast, actually, was my analogy about, you know, being in the clubs here and the security guys who were really confident and could really handle themselves.
Right, the whistle gun analogy.
Being the nicest, coolest guys who didn't have to bash anyone's head in.
And for sure. So, you know, well, one of my, like...
But
absolutely could, and we'll have to take him too far.
And half.
One of my most, like, respected coaches was a really, really notorious, like, security guard in Melbourne. And one of the best tips he ever gave me was, like, if someone challenges you to a fight outside, you say yes, you walk them to the front door, you let them go out, and you lock the door behind them. And he said, let them bang on the door, let them do all that crazy shit.
He learned that from the Pope, by the way.
That's what's up. See?
Word.
I got all the lineages. I got the lineage straight to the top. But you know, like that's how it is. Like when you're fighting, especially that guy was like an internationally ranked boxer, heavyweight boxer. When you're fighting, you lose a lot of that care about ego, especially in street situations. As a kid, and when I say kid, like 16 to 19, I had a lot of insecurities. I had a lot of wanted to prove myself. I had a lot of wanting to people to know that you're a tough guy. Now I'm the opposite. Now I avoid it at all costs.
So is it more of a with great power comes great responsibility sort of thing?
For sure, man.
Or is it because it's a job now?
It's a bit of both. It's a bit of both. It's definitely you don't want to do any... You definitely don't... I have a tendency to possibly overreact. So I would hate to overreact and then the next day think, shit, I've really hurt this dude and all he did was, you know, look at me the wrong way. That's an overreaction. But in the heat of the moment, blood's boiling, that might be the decision you've made. So definitely with great power comes great responsibility. But also, man, just in terms of my job, if I hit someone, I got no doubt what's going to happen, but there's also a chance that I break my hand.
Right. So you break your hand, that's, you know, personal, but what about the league? Would they fine you or would they just say, this dude, he's a loose cannon. We can't have him here because he's making our brand look bad.
Again, cause I'm not contracted to anyone, that wouldn't impact it. In terms of in the future though, if I got too many assault charges against me, I can't travel to America. Things like that are what you need to think about, and you have to be clever with that. You can't be a moron. You've got to be really smart with it. And the other thing is the image that you're going to put across. It's important to be mindful of that. You don't want to doctor it. You don't want to be fake. You got to be honest and be yourself. But unless you grew up in you know, the ghetto, being a real, real dude, don't try to be that, you know, just be yourself.
So my question is, going back to that great responsibility. So you're going in Beijing, you're coming to this BGG where apparently Justin Bieber trains. I mean, I don't know, if you don't know Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, there was no gi, right?
No, this was gi.
Oh, it was gi. But you didn't have your belt with you, right?
No. So it's one of those awkward ones where
do you explain to them okay, this is actually what I do professionally, so don't worry about it? Or
What color is your belt?
I'm a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is halfway along in the belt rankings, but BJJ is way different to a lot of martial arts. You got to spend two to five years on white belt. You don't get a belt quickly. And gyms that do pass on belts quickly, normally it's bullshit and it's heading towards...
So how many years for the purple belt, on average, you would say?
Purple belt would be anything from 5 to maybe 15 years.
Okay.
It can really be a long time. I know some dudes who have been blue belts and have been training for 10, 15 years.
But anyway, so you go in there, without your belt, do you have to explain to them, oh, yeah, I do this professionally, so don't get your ego hurt. I mean, well, you do professionally.
I'm never going to, introduce myself to someone as a pro fighter.
You'll play your song as you walk in there, fight song.
I walk in with, a boombox. Yeah. man. So I walked in. You just be nice. You try to bridge the language gap as best you can. Mm-hmm. When they explained that it was the advanced class, and they were saying, I'll come back at another time. I explained that I was a purple belt. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like talking to a kid trying to bridge the language gap. You just take away all the words except for the important ones. You know, it's just like you point to the belt and you say purple, and then you point to yourself. So that's pretty much what happened. They gave me a lone gi, so just like one of the gis, it stunk. And then they gave me a lone belt because I didn't bring my belt. And it's tough for me, man, because I don't do hardly any gi work. Like I might train in the gi once every couple of months. And but I know that the majority of gyms out there train in the gi exclusively or train in the gi more. So you've got to be prepared to train in it. If you want to travel and train, you've got to be prepared to train in the gi. Yeah, so trained with them. It was real cool.
Well, is there any cultural differences?
For sure. Between
Training
China,
in Australia and training.
Yeah, for sure, for
like
sure.
What?
Well, firstly, like everyone in China is very respectful towards the coach.
Okay.
That's one of the first things I noticed. There was a heap of respect. That is pretty universal, though. That happens in Australia. But I noticed it was kind of different. Like sometimes in like Australia, you'll hear like murmurings in the group when the coach is talking. In China, it was like deadly silent. The other thing that was cool was like at all the gyms I've been to, when the coach is instructing, a heap of the Chinese get their phones out and start recording.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, because I used to do that like just with a notepad and pen. Like I'd quickly run off to the edge when we get drink break and I'd write down the technique as fast as I could just so that I had a, you know, a carbon copy of exactly what happened that night so I can rethink about it. Trained with them. It was lucky that they were looking at half guard, which is like an area that I kind of have put a heap of work into, so I could just work out the technique even though I didn't know what he was saying. Once you get experienced at it, you just kind of watch what they're doing and you can work out what the technique is and what you need to do.
So I have a hypothetical question, all right? Because to be perfectly honest, you don't look like a fighter. I mean, you're just like, you're honestly a pretty good looking dude. You don't look like you're just like going to go kill some people. All right, so you're in the club. You're like chilling out. You have some beers. You start going buck wild. You get crazy. I come over with some security and say, "Motherfucker!" I start testing you. Are you gonna throw down and bust some shit or what's going on?
In China, man.
I mean, anywhere. I mean, are you kind of one of those like Zen dudes that say, "Okay, I'm gonna control my stuff. I know I can bust your ass up," because you don't look like a dude that can bust people up. But I mean, if I test you with a couple of Chinese little bodyguards, you go, "I know I can just take all four of these guys." And are you gonna do it?
Well. That's kind of like, I take that as a massive compliment. People say that to me all the time. They always say, like, you don't look like a fighter. And I take that as a compliment. People often mean it. Well, some people mean it as an insult. Some people are genuinely just surprised. But,
okay, I say yes. I don't mean that as an insult.
Yeah,
No. I mean that as I wouldn't, as people, when I go to security in clubs or in situations in clubs, I size people up and I see that, hey, there's a certain personality, there's a certain, like, maybe, you know, a little aggro, they're big or they're this way or that way, and I can see, like, how I'm going to have to handle the situation. You would be the college student from wherever that is just getting drunk in the club and I'll just, you know...
Just
destroy you at security.
And
then I get my ass kicked.
I take it as like a huge compliment because most people's thoughts on fighters are pretty negative. Most people think of fighters as a dickhead, a meathead. And most of the time, like in the past, they're not wrong. Like a lot of boxers, a lot of kickboxers that I've trained with are morons. But MMA is changing it because you got to be – it's a thinking game. It's a real thinking game. And especially because you have to be good at jiu-jitsu and you have to be good at other styles of martial arts. You have to be open. When it comes to me in a club, I would like to think I'm pretty chilled. Like I'm always – in my head, I think I'm like a Zen dude. But I'm always getting into mischief. I'm always like people always accusing me of maybe being a bit too aggressive, maybe having a short fuse. I don't think I do. I definitely think I'm cool as. But
all right. So any stories of going to the club, somebody underestimates you, and you just lay them out.
Luckily, because the place I'm from, Ballarat, is pretty small. It's like 100,000 people. So I got that kind of stuff out of the way like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. When I was like as a kid growing up, especially like in Ballarat, it's very hard to grow up in Ballarat and not get in a lot of fist fights as a dude.
How come?
It's just how it is. It's just the culture, you know. Like
so, going out means getting drunk and fighting somebody.
Absolutely. Like it was. It's no uncommon thing for, you know, maybe a couple of fights a week for one dude. when I was growing
one
up.
One dude.
Yeah, yeah, holy probably. Shit. Especially growing up, like you
that
know,
doesn't sound fun to me. I mean.
I don't know. But
seriously, for really a couple of fights a week?
For sure, for sure. When you were young, when I was younger, when I was younger. Now, I'm talking like from like 16 through to like 19 maybe. It's definitely like cracked down now. Similar to Sydney, Ballarat's got like a curfew. So you can't be like the clubs all shut the doors at 2:30. So you can't get into the club past 2:30. Mm-hmm. You can leave obviously whenever you want, but no more entry. So that kind of at the start, that kind of pushed violence a little bit because it pushed all the drunk people into the streets at 2:30. But now it's like Ballarat's a much safer place in terms of fist fighting. There's some other stuff going on, but like in terms of fist fight, like fighting, I don't think Ballarat's as bad as it used to be. And believe it or not, the generation before me was way, way crazier and way more violent than me. Like my mates who were like 5-10 years older than me, they used to get into way more drama than me.
Over what? Is it just drinking and fighting? I mean, or is there like family feuds and shit?
Let me guess this one. There's always a chick involved. There's always a chick.
Well, there's always either a chick or like money or drugs or something stupid like that. They're all stupid things. But when... Like Ballarat's small enough that everyone knows each other, and if you go out clubbing, there's only a certain few clubs you can go to, so you're guaranteed to run into that person who you've got drama with. But it's big enough that there's enough people to kind of sustain everything to keep going the way it is. So it's almost like the perfect little cocktail for violence. Especially because there's not much to do for young dudes.
Actually, I think so. I think that the towns where like you have 100,000 people, that's like, it's not quite, you know, like a tiny town where like it's just two families or a couple of families, but it's big enough that there's a little bit of anonymity that you do get into fights.
Yeah, and one of the big things in like Australia is like, well, especially in Victoria, is like footy clubs. So like we got like Aussie rules football, Australian rules football.
Right.
It's kind of like a mixture of like rugby and soccer.
Okay. So it's not rugby.
Nah, it's like really different to rugby. Like you can kick. It's pretty much just chaos. Like you can. It's just crazy. But so like different to America. When in America, like when you finish high school or college, you don't play that sport ever again. Like no one plays social American football. In Australia, like the country league and like the Saturday league football is like the most popular. Well, not the most popular, but everyone still plays. Okay. So like you finish high school, you finish playing footy.
When it's just a hobby.
Yeah. But again, like some clubs like pay players little bits of money here and there. But because those clubs have like rivalries on field and things get heated, when those clubs hit the piss on Saturday after a game, there's like teams with 50 guys in each team at a club. Two of the guys, you know, got into an argument on the football field. It kicks off, no doubt. And if one of my friends is kicking off, I'm kicking off. Like,
see, this is it's the same thing in Canada. I mean, it's just with the NHL and pro teams, right? And we actually have this. This is a common topic. You know, like you walk around here, Korea, places. You go to a bus stop and there's like a nice LED screen that connects and tells you where all the public transportation is. You have nice shit. No, I mean, I think it's the same thing in Canada. We can't have nice things. We're not allowed. We're basically because of this. I mean, in Canada, it'll be over a hockey game. It'll smash all those LED screens. Yeah. There'll be fights and riots on the street. This is why we can't have nice things, basically.
Or they make the nice things and then they put like a big gate around the LED screen. You know?
Well, man, this is my town. Last year, someone set the Christmas tree on fire in the middle of town. And it's like, This is why we can't have nice things. It's Christmas time. Everyone's happy and you set our Christmas tree on fire.
But you understand why people actually, why somebody would do that, right? I mean, in the same sense, like, yeah, I could picture the guy that did that. I can picture him 100%.
Yeah. I don't want to hang out with him. I don't want to know him, but I can see.
Yeah, you can see him. Yeah.
It's rare for me to go to a club because I don't drink hardly at all anymore. So it's rare for me to go to a club and to be like relaxed, to be chilled out. Because normally when I'm at a club, I'm sober.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm like done a bit of security work in the past, once you've put that security hat on, mm-hmm. it's hard to take it back off when you're chilling. You know what I mean? Like, when you go to a club, it's hard for you not to be, like, looking around, like, oh, there's about to be a fight over here. Sometimes it's hard to just relax and have a good time. I didn't even notice that happening the couple of times I've been out in China so far. It's just so cool. Everyone is just so cool. There's no kind of ego show. There's no cockfighting. There's no anything like that. It's just cool. And I didn't even recognize that. It was only when I was talking to someone about it and I realized, I was like, oh shit, I felt real cool and calm all night in China.
Yeah, and then we talked about this before earlier, but, you know, we have, like, in the States, in Canada, you have bouncers or tough guys, and, you know, they come in and they kind of set the tone.